So the title of my talk is, Does Neighborhood Income Predict Emergency Department Visits? And I'm going to just stop any kind of suspense that you might be in. And the answer is yes. So if you have to leave early, that's okay. Now you know. I am supported by an AHRQ dissertation award. I have no financial conflicts to disclose. So in a pay-for-performance environment where doctors are rewarded for their patients' use of different services, PCPs are held accountable for their patients' ED use, and this is a cycle where the pay-for-performance might be influencing the PCPs, PCPs influencing ED use, and that is a cycle as well. So our goal for this study is to develop a better measure of the PCP's ability to reduce avoidable ED use. So the population I'm working with is a sample of 53,000 enrollees in a Massachusetts managed care network. This is a proprietary set of data. All of the patients are enrolled in one of four commercial insurance plans. They're assigned to a participating PCP in 2010, and they had one or more months of observation in both 2010 and 2011. The data I have include age, sex, some limited race available for about 75% of the sample, and then I have base year PCP and ED visits. I know which payer they are assigned to or which payer they're covered by, and then I have information about their PCP quality. These are Z-scores that are calculated by the managed care network for their own internal rewards program with a mean of about 1 and a standard deviation of 0.85. And then I'm also using a morbidity measure, which predicts total use or total costs. It's generated using the DXCG software. And the mean is standardized to 1. So higher risks or higher morbidity measure we would expect higher utilization or costs. Lower than 1 would be less. So neighborhood poverty, since we don't have access to patients' individual incomes or anything like that, what we've done is we've used patient census tract. Census tracts are research-defined areas of approximately an average of about 4,000 residents. And we've taken the median family income in each patient's census tract and categorized it using 2009-2010 federal poverty thresholds for a family of four, which was $22,000 or so. And we've set up these three categories of less than 200% of FPT, 200 to 400% of FPT, and 400% or more. We have three outcomes that we're looking at in this study. I'm only focusing on two in this particular presentation. The first is any outpatient ED visit in the prediction year, 2011. It's a binary outcome. And the second is total primary care sensitive ED visits in 2011. So this is a little bit complicated, but I'm going to try and go through it so that you can grasp it. You may not have heard of it before, but we used an algorithm called the NYU ED algorithm, which was developed some years ago. The algorithm takes each ED visit's principal ICD-9 code and assigns a P. That P is the estimate of the probability that a visit was not an emergency, non-emergent, or it could have been treated by a PCP, or that good primary care could have prevented the visit. And those three categories are what we're calling primary care sensitive, or PCS. The P is between 0 and 1. And the total PCS visits is the sum of a person's Ps for each ED visit over the year, and that's our best estimate of their number of PCS ED visits that year. So here are some examples of how the algorithm sorts or categorizes different kinds of common ED visits. So a urinary tract infection would be assigned a P of 0.76. That's basically saying that 76% probability or so that a patient's visit to the ED for a UTI could have been prevented, treated by a PCP, or avoided in the first place, or wasn't an emergency. A visit for a headache would be assigned a P of 0.87. and a visit for asthma would be assigned a P of 1. So what that's saying is that all visits to the ED for asthma are either not emergencies, could have been treated in a PCP's office, or could have been prevented by better primary care. Not that they weren't emergencies, but that in an ideal system, there shouldn't be any ED visits for asthma. So here are some base year characteristics by the three neighborhood income categories, low, mid, and high. My sample is about 4% in the low neighborhood income category. The mean age is a little bit younger in that group. It's a little more male. Quite a bit higher proportion of black patients in that low income category. By the mean morbidity measure, which is using the base year claims to calculate projected use, the people from low income neighborhoods had the lowest mean morbidity measure, meaning that they, by this measure, would be considered the healthiest of the three category groups. They also had the lowest PCP quality scores. So patients from low-income neighborhoods are treated by providers who are lower than average quality. They had the highest ED visit rate in 2010 and the highest number of ED visits and the same number of ED visits and PCP visits, also the highest PCP visit rate. So no matter how you measure it, ED use is higher among those from low-income neighborhoods. This is showing unadjusted ED use by neighborhood income category in 2011, so the prediction year. This is the ED visit rate per 100. This is the blue bars are the low-income category. This is the mean number of ED visits per 100. And this is the mean number of estimated PCS ED visits per 100. People in low-income neighborhoods are more likely to have PCS visits, as I've shown you previously, but they're also at higher risk of going for an alcohol-related visit, but not for an injury-related visit. So here are the adjusted odds ratios for having any ED visit, and these are the effects of selected predictors. So the low-income neighborhood category has an odds ratio of 1.49. So people from low-income neighborhoods at 1.49 higher odds of going to the ED. We also see a higher odds ratio for black patients and those who had an ED visit in the base year. As well, we had two indicators that were significant. All the bold here is significant. So the only thing that wasn't significant was actually on this chart is sex. So the DXCG risk score, the mean morbidity measure that I mentioned earlier, is significant. It doesn't appear to have a whole lot of effect on this, but this is, remember, a one-unit change in the mean morbidity. And then the PCP quality score, again, a one-unit change is associated, higher quality PCP is associated with the lower odds of going to the ED. And this is the PCS visits. We see that in an OLS model with all the adjustments that we would typically see, that the people in the lower income neighborhoods had a higher P for PCS visits. So this is the overall curve of adjusted ED use by predicted ED use quantiles. So across the bottom here are the predicted ED use quantiles. So higher predicted ED risk actually corresponds to higher usage, both any ED visit and PCS ED visits. This is what the census tract income quantile actually contributes to that overall prediction. So these are quantiles across the bottom of decreasing income. So the most wealthy are at the left side and the poorest are at the right side. And then we see that the DXCG risk score or mean morbidity measure that I mentioned contributes actually quite a lot more to the projected risk. Curve is quite a bit steeper. Okay, so some limitations to this study. Population only includes the commercially insured people in Massachusetts. There are no Medicaid patients in this sample. It's a neighborhood income measure. It's not an individual income measure. And the algorithm for assessing PCS ED use could be improved. It is limited in a few different ways. Mainly, it doesn't take into account information about the severity of a patient's complaint when they go to the ED. So from this, we would conclude that neighborhood-level income does predict ED use, even after adjustment for the typical risk adjusters. And models used to assess PCP performance in limiting inappropriate ED use should consider using PCS visits as the outcome. It's the subsample of ED visits that is maybe what the provider could be more expected to influence, rather than all ED visits, which include a lot of injury visits and things like that. The PCP can't necessarily influence that. So the subset of PCS ED visits would be a good outcome to use. And using neighborhood-level predictors like income, in addition to the classical risk adjusters that we would use, improves the model and also removes some of that penalty that might be in the models that don't adjust for neighborhood income for physicians that have lower-income patients in their panels. And I'd like to add also that what I would conclude from this is that this fits very well into the whole social determinants of health that we've been hearing so much about during this conference. And we really need better solutions for unscheduled acute care in low-income neighborhoods. Thank you. Any questions? Yes? I don't have any Medicaid data in the sample. So this is only commercially insured patients. The sample was, so I'm working with a managed care network in Central Mass through my affiliation with UMass Medical School, and we're working with them on developing this performance measure for ED use for their commercially insured population. I would love to do my next steps after this. I would love to use an all-payer data set that includes Medicaid patients and Medicare and all of that. Yes. Yes. I think it's 138%, but I'm not 100% sure. Yes. Yes, and as you saw, my sample was, you know, on the smaller side. Massachusetts is a pretty wealthy state, so yeah. We did play around with that income categorization. We looked at, you know, 250% and different definitions. The results were very similar when we did those sensitivity analyses.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah.
I'm just wondering about the inclusion criteria. Did you exclude those patients who are very paranoid, every nausea, vomiting, ER, and apnea? That's one thing. And number two is that if I live or still is took to that homeless. So I have homeless outside the emergency room always, I mean, just because maybe that day they didn't have food to eat. So it would be interesting to see the baby presentation.
Yeah, that's right.
Can you repeat the question or respond from the microphone so people can get it?
I'm not sure I got the question.
The question has the inclusion criteria for mental illness patients that, you know, the paranoid old lady who always came to the emergency room, and maybe she just had a.
So I included all patients. I didn't exclude anybody based on any diagnoses. But maybe we would see some of the tendency to go to the ED reflected in that the use of the ED in the base period being a high prediction of whether you went to the ED in the prediction year. So you do see that influence, yeah. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned that the algorithm needs some adjustment. My question is, where did you get the information to estimate this algorithm?
The algorithm was developed some years ago by a team at New York University. They did. Yes, Billings. Yes. So they used a sample of about, I think, 6,000 Bronx hospital encounters and did a full patient, record, medical record review of all of the visits and took in, so they might have 50 UTI cases and they used the actual what happened to develop the P's for a UTI.
Because it caught my attention that you put one to ask, like a complete preventable P. situation in an emergency room, and that's not the case. I mean, technically, you cannot prevent all asthma cases. That is possible.
There is an argument to be made that with ideal and perfect primary care, patients would be well educated in how to manage their asthma. They would have rescue medications available that work perfectly for them. I mean, these are the assumptions. It's not a perfect world that we live in, of course, and this isn't necessarily always the case. But that is, in an ideal healthcare system, an asthma patient would not have to go to the ED for an asthma exacerbation because they would have, the ability to go to their doctor's office immediately if need be. Even during off hours or this kind of thing. So, yes.
Yeah, so I'd like to support that from the point of view of the treatment of diabetes. And most patients will come to us in the pandemic, with that diabetes of cause is, failure, not only the patient, but the perspective of that system. Like, no patient with diabetes should,
Yeah,
except for maybe a child who's diagnosed and that these things could happen overnight, that patient shouldn't go into the hospital. From a clinical point of view, even if it weren't a perfect world, but a little adequate, like it should be a rare situation from my perspective, that's not what I'm saying.
Yeah, but
people
diabetes is quite different from asthma. I mean,
I think Arlene might have a...
So, Arlene Ash, this is my student, and I'm the other name on her talk. I think Lisa answered very well, and your clarification is very much to the point. The idea of a CPSED count is to say, you don't want to hold somebody responsible when one of their patients goes to the ED because they were shot by a gun, that they were run over by a truck. Those things ought to be out of the count. So it's not to say that every single ED visit that occurs to one of your patients for asthma is a cause for taking away your license. It's just saying that the number of ED visits for asthma among your patients is a measure that you ought to be able to bring down. And if you're able to bring it down below what other people's patients who are similar typically experience, then you're doing a good job.
And so we would reward you.
Zero is not the benchmark against which you're being held accountable. You're being held accountable for the expected amount of hospitalization of EDUs that will occur for patients with asthma. And so it's that, that every asthma visit is potentially something that better care might avoid, whereas every gunshot wound did not. So the gunshot wounds are in there, the asthma's far.
I'd like to add from a perspective of the international healthcare system from the American sector, which is where I've been working, they put in Sweden, certainly the benchmark that they have not really zero, because you have absolutely no barrier access to primary healthcare. Physicians are trained in applying to physicians that you often do in command. And that's a good point of view.
So nobody wants to be reported on. And it's not entirely your responsibility if your patient with asthma ends up in the ED. But we believe, and it's been shown, that in a system that runs well, these numbers can go down to close to zero. So what you would be praised for in a system where in 1,000 patients with asthma, there were a certain number expected, if you did better than that, you don't have to be a zero, but you do better than the number that is typical in among patients treated by other doctors, then you would be considered to be doing a good job. But it is a reasonable performance measure. That's what the point is. That it's something that you could strive to do better. And we know that in better systems, there's less of them.
I'm going to pretend that it's done with how it sounded, it's supposed to be secure when you compare it to your peers. And that's kind of the type of commissioning model where you're compared to other positions. And so it's not that, okay, we expect to have zero absences in AD. So for example, if you're over here and all of your peers are over here, that's what we need to do to have to close your test.
My question is, was there any other condition that will score at the same one or pretty close to one?
Yes, there were quite a few, and I'd be happy to share with you more information about the algorithm after this.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you so much, everybody. It was for being the stalwarts, my fellow presenters, and thank you.